Hello and welcome to another episode of The Cocktail Conceit. This is a podcast where two best friends who are bartenders are separated by social distancing. And each week we pick a piece of media that one of us has a history behind and the other one hasn't experienced before. And one of us introduces the other to that piece of media and we talk about it. And then at the end of the episode, we have to make a cocktail based on that piece of media. Because that's the conceit. My name is Adam. I am a craft cocktail bartender who is homeless.
technically, you're living in a place.
I am living in a place.
You're not on the streets.
No, but I'm also not paying rent.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's like the best kind of being able to have a home is the one you don't have to pay for.
I guess that's true.
I mean, isn't there like a thing about, you're not supposed to call them homeless anymore? It's like...
Yeah, houseless people.
Houseless people, that's it. Yeah. I kind of agree with that because, I mean, homelessness has a stigma attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my name's Logan and I do have a home that I pay probably too much for every month in the current times. I'm also a bartender. I do events coordinating as well. And
How you doing, Logan?
You know, I think I just fully accepted that I'm not going to go home and visit my family for the holidays.
Oh, yeah, that's not a great idea.
No, it's a terrible idea. Well, I was hoping things would kind of, like, settle down for future listeners. We are still... This is right in the middle of COVID pandemic times, right before the holidays. So, But I just...
Things are settling up.
Yeah, they're getting worse. They're absolutely getting worse. I have an elder... No, I don't want to say elderly. My stepmother is rather old compared to, like, my dad and her. Like, my dad's, like, 60, and she's, like, 10 years older than him. She's going to be pushing, like, 70. Pretty sure. So...
Mm. Yeah, no, that's firmly in the dangerous categories.
Yeah. And then my mom is like always been not in great health, so yeah, it just seems like a bad idea. Anyway, I've accepted that, and that's kind of weird. Like, to feel, I kind of feel relieved a little bit, which sounds bad, but
no, I totally get that, because there were several years when I was traveling that I did not, like, I wasn't home for the holidays, like Christmas and such, and that was actually kind of nice those two times. Like, I don't want that to be the rule, but having, like, you know, a break from doing the Christmas lunch dinner thing for the first time in my life, it was pretty nice.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
I also didn't have any other obligations because I was in a country where it didn't have any family. So I just, those days, just, I just kind of chilled out. I ate barbecue with a bunch of Germans Christmas Day.
Yeah, that sounds dope.
When I was backpacking. Yeah, it was pretty fucking rad.
I feel like Germans would make good barbecue.
Boy, I don't know why you would.
I don't know, just because they have a lot of good meats. Like, I'm not saying that, like, they're good at barbecuing itself, but the quality of meat they would use would be good.
Oh, okay. Well, it was just a bunch of fucking backpack kids in a hostel.
Yeah, probably not so good then.
No, and, like, the company that Germans keep is... boring.
Okay. Calling out a whole nationality there.
Oh, I'm calling out a whole nationality because there are so many German kids backpacking through New Zealand. It's literally half the population of any hostel you go to. And man, there's not a sense of humor between the lot of them. I'm sure they have, like, nice German jokes, like, that they tell themselves, but actually, no. You know what? I was working next door to this bar whose bar manager was a German kid, and I remember my Maori buddy, Sammy, first time he met him, was like, oh, cool, hey, Marcus, so, hey, you know any good German jokes? And Marcus was like, yeah, no. And Sammy was like, oh, yeah, I figured.
You know, I've never heard of any German comedians, we'll just say that.
Yeah, and I think I've even heard another stand-up do a bit about this, where it's like, yeah, if you've ever been to Germany, they don't, like, you can't, like, no one cracks a joke there. And he's like, man, these people are really humorless. I wonder why. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Because okay. The Holocaust. Because if Holocaust I was German, I sure wouldn't want anyone making any sort of joke because you have no idea where it's going to lead. It's you know where it's going to lead, but...
Yeah, we're just American and we ignore all of our atrocities rather than, you know, taking them to heart. Anyway, what are you drinking, Adam?
Oh, I had to go through trials and tribulations to make this cocktail right here, but it was worth it. Just before we started recording, I wanted to run upstairs and make a quick tequila sour.
Mm-hmm.
And had all the ingredients for that, except the simple syrup I was going to throw in there had gone bad.
Yeah.
So I had to make honey syrup on the fly real quick, which is why it took me so long.
That's fair. That's kind of annoying to do.
But honey syrup is way better than simple syrup for a tequila-based sour. So it's really good. It's basically a Tommy's now.
Interesting.
With honey instead of agave.
Usually use agave in the ones that make it work, at least.
I mean, that is the the official build for like a Tommy's is, you know, tequila, lime juice, agave, and then it's just make a daiquiri out of those things.
Yeah.
Ooh, there's one other thing about this that's really special. And it's that me and my partner got a whole bottle of Altos and then a fresh poblano and cut the whole thing up and threw all of the cut up bits of the poblano and the seeds and steeped it in the tequila for a week. Actually, I think you might have had a tiny mason jar with like 2 ounces of poblano tequila.
I think I have some drink, yeah.
And it's... Man, that shit's really good.
It was really good. I didn't have enough. I didn't have two full ounces left. I had like maybe like an ounce.
That's enough for a shot. But yeah, if anyone listening wants to do something like somewhat crafty, but doesn't have any of the fancy equipment that me and Logan talked about, just get yourself a bottle of tequila, get yourself one fresh poblano, chop it up, dice it up real tiny, and scrape all the seeds out, and throw all of that into a fresh bottle of Blanco tequila and just let it hang out for a week and then strain out all them seeds and pepper bits and you'll get a mildly green, just fucking awesome liquor.
Honestly, like the amount of infusing you can do with just like some like little mason jars and some Everclear, just get at it.
Oh yeah. So what are you drinking, Logan?
I am drinking a Clover Club.
Those are good. I like those. I went to Clover Club in Brooklyn about one year ago. Yeah. And then, oh man, that's a bummer.
Oh, they closed down?
It was either Clover Club or Pegu Club. And one of those closed in New York. And it's just like, shit, bummer. I was just there.
Yeah, there's been a lot of those bars closing down. In general, kind of like there's no direct relief package for them, which kind of sucks.
I don't know if you follow Death & Co. on Instagram, but their Instagram feed for the past few months has made it sound like they are going to close at any second now.
Yikes.
Because a lot of their posts are like, hey, we need relief for small businesses like bars and restaurants, like... Not giant corporations, like, tell your congressman, senator to get a bill going for, you know, small businesses right now. It's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's not happening this year.
If Death & Co. closes... You know what? If Death & Co. closes, that might actually energize the bartending community around the country to fucking take this seriously and, I don't know, do something. I guess that's shitty to say. There's been a lot of like hospitality, like helping each other out in their own local city, but like doing something on a national level, like
for sure.
If we had a martyr to rally us behind a battle cry, that would probably get like a bigger movement of hospitality workers going. So if it was you know Death & Co. forever. That would probably get people going.
That would be pretty cool. I mean, at this point, I think it wouldn't really have mattered much just because the Senate has been deciding to do jack shit for the last 6 months until it comes time for them to do something that gives them political gain.
Yeah, pretty much. Which
that's
is
cool.
Yes. There's a lot of good things going on in our world right now.
Nope. Anyway.
Hey. So instead of talking about all the shitty things in reality, how about a little bit of escapism?
That sounds great.
So this week we're talking about a topic that I brought to the table, which is the novel Halo: The Fall of Reach by Eric Nyland. I fucking love this book. Came out in 2001. It came out on October 30th, 2001. This book is almost exactly 19 years old.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
And man, I read the shit out of this in high school. And I really got into Halo.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was playing a bunch of Xbox in high school. And I was really into sci-fi novels and fantasy novels in high school. Because I was a popular kid.
No, I feel you
this
on that.
This is the only book. This is one of only like three books that I have reread multiple times. Usually when I read a book, that's it. Like I've read it, I retain all that information and I don't need to read it again.
Mm.
But this one, I have reread maybe a half a dozen times over the course of that 19 years.
Damn. Well, it's a ringing endorsement. I'll be fairly blunt. I didn't really like this book very much.
That's okay, and I'm not surprised.
There's like things I did like about it, but on the whole, I thought it was kind of dull. It kind of did that thing where it's like explaining things I didn't really need to have explained, or like here's the thing I always think about. I do this with every alternate media, like tie-in novel or like sequel or like not like a remake or whatever that comes out. I try to think about it as if it was another movie in that same genre. That if you just took out all the references to whatever the previous thing was or whatever the tie-in thing is, and then I think about it like that, and if I think it's still good, then I think it's like succeeded as like a piece of media. And the only things that kind of give passes on that are like things that are like purposely like playing with the idea of the thing or like reworking it, or like some remakes do that. Like I think we've talked about like the Evil Dead remake before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like, part of what makes it good is that it's playing off of what the previous thing was.
Like a deconstruction.
Yeah, deconstruction, exactly. That's the word I was looking for, but could not say.
You have to, it doesn't make sense outside of the media that it's deconstructing, but if you have also that cipher, it's really, really good.
But I think on the other side of that, there's a lot of, especially tie-in novels, like tie-in novels are really bad about it, especially like some of the Star Wars novels are like that, and I've only read like a couple, but some of them get to that point where it's like kind of just referencing the thing that it's talking about, and if you just like took away all references, it would just be kind of like a very mediocre sci-fi novel. And that's kind of where I feel like this land. Like there's a few moments for me, and we could talk about it, that like shine through. I'm like, oh, that was actually really cool, I like that. But for the most part, I'm just like, man, I just don't care about any of these people. This book has done no legwork to make me care about any person in this novel, and all of them talk like robots, and it's just not interesting.
Yeah, I will say that I haven't read this for, a good long while. Mm. Like, I think since I got out of, college, and just listening to like the first few chapters again, like the note I wrote immediately was, boy, this is cheesier than I remember.
Yep. And I feel you on that a little bit. So like one of the series that I read a lot in high school, into college, was the Dresden Files series. And I feel like these exist on a similar-ish like line. I think the Dresden Files is a little better because it's like the source material rather than a derivative of another material. Because, like, I mean, background, I did play Halo in high school. I never had an original Xbox, so I didn't play a lot of the first one. I got a 360 mm-hmm. later, so I played a lot of the sequels. Halo 3 ODST is my favorite by far. Mostly
it is the best one.
Well, and the reason I think that is because the Master Chief in himself is not that interesting of a character. The best thing that you can do for the series is to take him out of it and then make it about other people. And I think that's where this book excels, is the moments where they're just like, oh, that super badass dude, get him like out for like a couple chapters. Just get him out of there.
The best chapters are definitely the ones that are not from the Master Chief's point of view.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a little bit. I was thinking about the way that I, like, if I'm obviously not like an author, I've never written a full book, but if I was given the task of writing a book in this series, what I would do is to make a character up or take a side character and write about them, and then maybe have the Master Chief like in the story doing stuff from their perspective, or from like an outsider's perspective, or even like a Covenant's perspective. That'd be kind of cool. You could do a fucking monster like horror novel about
that would be so cool.
Just like you got like a team of like a jackal and a grunt, and they're just like trying to not get murked by the Master Chief and just survive. It'd be great.
That would actually be a really fun perspective shift.
Yeah, so that's my thing. I think the problems this book comes to is when it's trying to write from John or the Master Chief's perspective, and it's just kind of not good. Because, I mean, he starts out and he's six, and it's like, this is not a six-year-old. Six-year-old has ever thought like this, ever. And there was like one or two moments where I kind of got it, and then for the most part, it was like, no, this just doesn't check out. Do you want to like describe a little bit about what the book is about, or how do you want to, where do you want to go?
Yeah, so this came out right around when the first couple Halo games came out, and it was supposed to be the background, like the prequel to the first Halo game. Mm-hmm. Which, if you go back and play the first Halo game, they make, like, side references to this happening, like Reach and, like, oh, the Fall and yada, yada, yada. And on the back of, like, the box for the game, it says, like, oh, yeah, Master Chief's the last of the Spartans because they all just got wiped out. And so this, the main plot points of the Fall of Reach were, like, written somewhere in, like, a lore Bible at Bungie. And so I think they just handed that to Eric Nyland and were, like, write us up a book.
Yeah, like, and so these are your constraints.
It's basically just like a sci-fi novel. Humans have like a star-spanning civilization. They encounter aliens, and then they kidnap a bunch of kids, and literally at the age of 6 and 7, like ancient Spartans, and they train them to be military geniuses, and then they pump them full of like augmentations and steroids that kills half of them.
Yep.
And then they kit them out in power armor so that they become space marines,
basically. And then,
the planet that they did all that to the kids on gets taken by the aliens, and then they run away, and as soon as they run away, that's when the opening cutscene of the original Halo game starts to play.
Yep.
So it's like a pretty generic-y, like, sci-fi space marine, like, just bald head space marine tale. This particular writing style, like, man, all right. There's a bunch of Halo novels.
Yeah.
And there's one after this that actually tells the story of the first Halo game as a novelization, and I dislike that one quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that sounds like a terrible idea. I don't know why you would do that.
And then they tapped Eric Nyland again to write the prequel to the second Halo game, because at the end of the first Halo game, Master Chief like blows up a Halo, and then he's just sitting in space. And then the second game starts with him on Earth, and everyone's like, "How'd he get here?" So they had Eric Nyland again write a prequel to their game, and then they tapped him one last time to write another one, but it's not actually a prequel to a game. It's a prequel to the rest of the novels. And so, yeah, there are a bunch of novels that come after it that pick up that story and make references that to that specific story. So,
interesting.
Yeah, which is, they kind of tapped him to be like, okay, we're past the games now. Now we're really rich and we have a lot of money, and Microsoft is going to make Master Chief their Mickey Mouse. So, Eric Nyland, one more time, write us a novel on which we can... write us like the spine of a universe on which we can staple the rest of this extended universe to. And so that's the third novel that he wrote. But man, the reason I'm geeking out is because I actually really like Eric Nyland's writing style, because his writing style is third person semi-omniscient, which is the same writing perspective as Pride and Prejudice.
Gotcha.
And also Game of Thrones.
Kind of.
Yeah, because it's, you have your third person, so you're not like, so it's definitely telling the story, but you have one person that you are omniscient with during the telling of the stories, or in the chapters, so that you're inside their head and you get to hear their inner monologue, but you don't hear anybody else's inner monologue for their chapters. And
I think holds
even when somebody who is a perspective character comes into that person's chapter and they have a conversation, you don't get to see the inside of their head.
Yes.
It's always the perspective character.
Yeah. I think the one thing I would say about how it's done in this is it's never like it sticks with one person per chapter or whatever, but it doesn't really flow very well for me, because I really like the Game of Thrones series, and I think it does it exceptionally well.
I mean, I also do think that George R. R. Martin is a more technically skilled author than Eric Nyland.
Yeah. I'm more used to, I think I have a lot of experience with that perspective. The way that Eric was doing it wasn't quite doing it for me. It wasn't as seamless as I'm used to, but I also have been re-listening through all the Game of Thrones books here recently, so maybe that's me being a little looking from a better perspective, I guess, you know. And then the other series that I've reread recently, or re-listened to recently, because we are doing the audiobook on this, we haven't read the actual book. I'm re-listening through the Dresden Files books again, and those are all first person, like, not omniscient at all, like, just totally first person, basically.
I remember trying to read, like, the first Dresden File book, just, like, at some point in college. And the thing that turned me off from it in the first chapter is the same reason why I only got to page 13 of Twilight when that was big in high school.
Yeah.
Is because the author was telling me about the character instead of showing me about the character.
Yeah.
And I really think, like, the same rule for a movie applies to even novels, even though you're only ever telling, because it is a book, but the author's voice, like the narrator's voice, just going, oh yeah, Dresden was a level-headed guy, is like, no, don't tell me that. Like, let me see him in, like, an intense situation and being level-headed.
Okay, so I'll tell you a thing about the Dresden File novel series that will make you probably feel a little better about it. The first novel he literally wrote while he was in college, like a bachelor's college, like he was like a junior or sophomore. And I'm sure it was edited since, like, edited before it was fully published. But that's, it's kind of rough. There's things I like about it, the first novel, but I think he definitely hits more of a stride where he, like, is better about doing that. But that's, like, literally, like, his first foray into a novel. Like, that's his legitimate first novel at all. And with that perspective, I think it's better. But it's, yeah, I think you're right about that. It also has a lot of tropes that are a little problematic that I don't like. We're not talking about Dresden Files, that we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, in comparison, I do think that one of the things that this novel does succeed at is you have a lot, like, several different, like, main characters who all have to show a different personality trait, like, oh, Dr. Halsey has to be like this, like, sociopathic doctor, and then Captain Keyes has to be this, like, seemingly brilliant, like, naval combat guy, and then Master Chief has to be like this like unstoppable badass, like, bald head space marine. And he does a really good job of showing that, instead of, like, ever telling you, oh, the Master Chief, he's real strong and cool and shit. He just...
I think, like, that's true in parts. There's definitely some moments where I would agree on that. I think all of the Captain Keyes chapters that you get, he does the best job at doing that.
I think Nyland does the best job of writing Captain Keyes.
Yeah, honestly, that's my thing. This entire book had been... Like, you had, like, the introduction chapter that was from Halsey's perspective, and then the rest of it was all from Captain Keyes' perspective, it would have been way better. Or, like, even between the two of them, I did not need John's perspective in this book at all. Like, maybe, like, give him, like, an epilogue. Like, or, like, the first interaction where he's got Cortana in his head. Like, maybe that. That was kind of good. Everything else was kind of just, I just don't need any of that. But I think
it's really, so, like, it's really hard to write that character of, like, John Spartan 117, because he's supposed to be a, like, emotionless, like, pseudo robot man.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the, it's like if you tried to write a novel, a Half-Life novel, from Gordon's perspective. What could possibly be going on in that dude's head?
Look, what's his name from Half-Life? Gordon?
Yeah, Gordon.
What's his first name?
I think it's Gordon Gordon.
Anyway, Gordon. At least in his, like arguing from that side of it, he's an astrophysicist or something. He's like a... No, the quantum physicist. He's like a very intelligent guy. It never comes through in the games at all. And that's like...
No, he just hits things with a crowbar.
Yeah, exactly. But I think if you would, like, inner monologue on him, you might get some of that. But that's the most I could say.
If you had an inner monologue on Gordon, I feel like it would just be the theme song to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air playing on a loop. As this guy just, like, skips through the games, like, gunning down soldiers and hitting aliens with crowbars.
Oh, man. So I think he did Keyes the best, though. Because, like you said, the first time you see Keyes, you actually get... You're from Halsey's perspective, right? Or you're from Keyes' perspective. Yeah, you're from Halsey's perspective. Actually, no, I don't remember.
No. In the prelude, it's Keyes' perspective when they're on the ship. And then when they go down to the planet, Halsey's perspective.
It shifts, yeah. Mm-hmm. But so you get a little bit of... you get Halsey's, like, impression of Keyes, and I think that's a good way to do it, of, like, trying, like, being able to narrate what a character is like by using the lens of another character is an okay way to do that. Because then you're not just saying what the person is, you're saying what this person thinks that person is, and that adds more depth. And that's what Game of Thrones does a lot. You get, like, those dual-sided, like, views on a lot of stuff, and you get hear what other people say about other people, and that kind of gives you a bit more
crumbs.
There'll
be a Jamie chapter where he, like, says something about Jon Snow in his mind, and then there's going to be a Jon Snow chapter where he, like, thinks about Jamie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jamie's actually a really good example, because, like, you go through the first two full books with no perspective from Jamie. All you get is everyone talking about him, and you get to see him from other perspective, like, doing things. So you get an idea in your head about what he's like, and you're before you even get a single, like, perspective chapter, you have, like, this already built up idea of who that character is. And then when you finally do get your perspective, it totally, like, demolishes that. Like, it changes. Well, that totally demolishes, but it turns it a lot.
It changes,
like,
getting Jamie's perspective is a key function to getting the face turn.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're inside a character's perspective, you automatically want to root for them. Even if they're the bad guy, so to say, you kind of want to be like, It's the same reason why playing Grand Theft Auto is fun. If you're like running around trying to get like a 5-star, like you're being the bad guy, but it's kind of fun to see like the bad guy succeed when you're behind the bad guy's shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. And you're not actually the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree on that. But yeah, so I think this novel definitely could have benefited from just not having any John chapters, or not having very few, like very sparse John chapters. But it kind of, for me, the first like, we say it's like a fourth or a third of the, probably like a third of the book. Like you have your Halsey chapter, you have your Keys chapter, and then you're basically, I think you get like one more Halsey chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're from John's perspective for like, I don't know, like a lot of pages, like yeah. way too many uninterrupted pages just from his perspective. And the whole like story just like ground to a halt. And I'm like, I don't really know what this book is about anymore, because the title is Fall of Reach, and all I'm getting is them turning kids into monsters, basically. And that's my other big thing. In the back of my head this entire time, so like, I played the Halo games, and I kind of vaguely knew what the Spartans' backgrounds were. Like, I knew that they were, like, trained and, like, genetically engineered and had, like, special suits and shit. I don't think I really internalized the idea that they kidnapped a bunch of 6-year-olds.
Yeah.
So that they could make superhumans, and yeah. that's really fucked up.
All it's right,
really I wanna, fucked up.
It is very fucked up, and I wanted to get on this. Is that this book is definitely written at a 9th or 10th grade reading level,
because
it was marketed to, you know, high school guys who were playing Halo at the time.
Yeah,
but beyond that, all of the like super tragic and like super evil shit and like the moral gray area, because like in the book the human faction doesn't just kidnap a bunch of kids to go fight aliens. They kidnap a bunch of kids in order to quell rebellion.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that 10-15 years later, when they're finally ready to like turn these super soldier monsters on, is right when the aliens invade. And so it's just serendipitously a good thing that they had super soldiers in their back pocket,
which
that
they were seems just like a...
about they were just about to let them go genociding.
Well, they know in the background they talk about it, that like
yeah.
while they're on the way to go fight a Covenant ship at one point, they're like, yeah, and then on the way Halsey had to stop and do a bunch of missions. And then they don't talk about it at all. It's like you just
they do about a dozen missions against humans.
Yeah.
And then they don't do missions against humans anymore, because it's just all alien fights.
Yeah, so that was like
but that is baked into the lore of one of the most now popular franchises, like in media, like Halo, is this grim, like 40K style, this grim, dark, morally gray.
Yeah,
like could be a deep, like dark sci-fi world with moral implications and stuff. This book
is not
takes all of those and then fully takes them, grabs a giant pin, puts it in them, and sets it to the side.
Yep.
And goes, I'm going to tell you about this, and then I'm going to make none of my plot about it.
Yep. And that was the thing. I was like, you know, I was thinking a little bit about like the 40K universe, because The idea of that is a good one. Like, it's not a bad idea. Way that it's executed in this book makes it seem like they're definitely endorsing this idea. Not directly, but they're definitely not saying it's a bad thing.
It's the whole grimdark future is supposed to be like no one's really the good guy.
Yeah, but you don't get that from this. The humans are the good guys. You're supposed to be rooting for the humans. And I got to a point like at the end of like the John chapters, I'm like, I don't want you guys to win. You guys just like tortured 6-year-olds like
and
on purpose.
There's a really intense chapter. It's not written intensely, but you can read it as intense, where John wakes up from getting his superpowers and he goes to a weightlifting room and he's like lifting some weights and he's feeling awkward and weird because he has superpowers now. And then a couple, like, super badass, like, older Marines come in.
Specifically, and they're ODSTs.
Oh, they are specific. Oh, I was going to say one other thing is that there's lots of pronouns, there's especially so towards the front of this book.
They don't explain most of them.
No. But there's lots of pronouns because they're trying to push, like, this is related. This is a Halo book. It, sure it has is. The Halo things in it. We could just say it's a Jeep, but no, it's a Warthog.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah, so some ODSTs come in, and they get all toxically masculine around him and pick a fight, and then he murders them with his bare hands.
Yep, by accident.
And by accident, with his superpowers.
Because he's a Frankenstein monster that they made from a six-year-old.
Yes, and his reaction to it is nothing.
Yeah, he has no response at all.
which is horrifying, but is not written to shine a light on how horrifying that is.
No, it's not. I'm going to crack this beer open, and I just want to make a statement about that, because otherwise it's going to be in there anyway. So now it's done. So that's actually...
You do that, you should get it really close to the mic, and we should get some ASMR in there.
Oh, yeah, you're right. We should do that next time. I think I've done that before. So it's going to be repetitive at that point. No, actually, I don't think that's the worst one of those, because later in the book, there's the first like training session he has with Cortana, or training session, in which he like basically maims and or murders a lot of people that are just part of a training program to get him used to Cortana.
Well, in that chapter, he specifically tries to non-lethal them.
Yeah, because... but one of the non-lethal ones is, I'm going to shoot this guy through the knee. And I'm like, they say that like casually. And in my head, I'm just like, that guy's never going to walk normal again.
No.
Like, you guys are in the future, but like, no.
They do have robot legs.
Yeah, but you just... No, but in my head, I'm just like, okay, so that guy's never going to walk normal again, just so that you can figure out if this AI works okay in your brain, which you probably could have found a different way to do.
To be fair, in that chapter, the whole like subtext of that is that there's a another shadowy figure who doesn't like the Spartan 2s because they got the funding and he didn't.
Mm.
And so he's behind the scenes pulling strings to try and... murder John 117 right here, because if he murders him right here, he can say, oh look, he failed, he died during a training mission, this was a waste, you definitely shouldn't make any more Spartans, you should give me money and I'm gonna make, like, I don't know, race cars,
robots.
Yeah, robots.
I mean, they already have the AI.
But oh man, lo and behold, the main character of this very popular video game series, Mary Sue's his way through this training course mission where the guys who are training with him are using lethal force and they shoot a missile directly at his face.
They sure do.
And he's so cool and badass that he literally karate chops the missile and it doesn't kill him.
Well, he had shields at that point, so I mean, it's fine. It's fine.
I know, but like, it's in Halo, if somebody shoots you with a rocket launcher, you die.
Yeah, you still die.
You still die.
Once again, that's why I really like ODST. That's why it's my favorite one. Just a really good game. Just like, if you're going to play one Halo game, go play Halo 3 ODST, and then you're good. You're good at all of it. No, so like
I would endorse that statement.
Yeah, no, Master Chief definitely Mary Sue's his way through. I had a really good point, and I totally forgot what it was just now.
Well, I could talk about this for days, because...
No, there's very specifically a thing I wanted to say, though. What was it?
While you're thinking, I will just say that when I was rereading this, I realized how not greatly it was written.
Yeah.
But that didn't stop me from loving it in that nostalgic way, and it didn't stop me from thinking of how interesting it is that a lot of better media has sprung off of this.
Yeah. As media does, yeah.
They had those little, like, little Easter eggs in there of, like, oh, the humans, like, stole kids, and, oh, the Spartans were actually meant to stop civil war. And there is a trilogy that came out, like, a decade later called the Kilo 5 trilogy.
Mm.
And it's... basically another series of three books that has like a Spartan and some ODSTs, and they go around the like the go around space doing dope shit, but it deals with all of that dark human background stuff really well, and it like actually brings that up and has the characters both be fleshed out and has like the world be fleshed out in that like grim dark way. If you want to see this done well, like I would say read that trilogy of books and do that reading perspective you were talking about, where you pull it out of this universe and say, all right, let's imagine this author didn't get lucky enough to have a super popular media franchise stapled onto the front of their sci-fi novel.
Yeah.
Would I still think this is a successful book? And I think that trilogy, the Kilo 5 trilogy, passes with flying colors.
Cool. Cool. Well, yeah. I might check that one out. I think I've heard of that particular trilogy.
Yeah. It's a female author.
Oh, that's good.
Like, the two main characters are both female. And it's... Yeah. It's a better... it's much more... Oh, it's also written, I think, at a higher reading level.
Good. Well, yeah. I mean, you gotta think about, like, the audience they're writing to. It's probably...
Ages. Yeah, they're writing to... It's sort of like the Harry Potter books, where if you read the first one and you go, boy, this one was written really, like, dully, and it's like, well, yeah, it's written for fourth graders.
Yeah. She was literally writing to her audience as they aged. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, yeah, so one of the other things I would say about this is I don't, in general, I appreciate it when... books or media doesn't over explain what things are or over explain what jargon is in the moment, because I think it takes you out of it. There's some novels that I have read before where they literally spend like just paragraphs and paragraphs in the first chapter. Every time a new thing comes up, they explain the shit out of it.
Oh, like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And or any shonen anime.
It's terrible. It's a terrible way to explain things. It's so bad. Don't do that. That's the worst way to do it. You want to sprinkle things in, leave mysteries. Like, don't explain everything all in the face. You want to give like a little bit of a hint, like be like, it's like, I think My Hero does a pretty okay job at this. Where like, they just like, people got superpowers. They just do. Like,
people have superpowers. We're not going to tell you about the midichlorians. No. Because you don't want to know about the midichlorians.
No. And then you slowly get like more details about the history in the past and like different kinds of powers different kinds of people have and like how people deal with not having powers. But it never like stops every 5 minutes to explain all the details and all that shit. But yeah, anyway, I think that's like the worst way to do it. This novel didn't do that, but it also just kind of needs to in some spots, because like when the Covenant first show up, they don't explain them at all.
Oh no.
Not even a little bit. Like, there's like one chapter in the very beginning where it's from John's perspective as an adult. He's with other Spartans and they're kind of describing grunts and like jackals and stuff. But then they meet their first elite and they just whoop whoop over it.
They do not
just straight up don't explain it at all. Like, they don't explain what the ships look like. They barely explain, like, you kind of get a sense of what the guns do throughout the book, which kind of works okay. But, like, you needed it a bit more. Like, I know that I was definitely very aware that the only people that were supposed to be reading this book were people who had already played the game. Like, if I didn't have the game perspective while I was reading this, this book would just be a lot of gibberish and would leave me with a lot of questions. And, like, that's not always the worst thing, because, like, some series do well with that. But I think, especially when you're going from... like a movie or a video game to a book, you gotta do a little bit of legwork. You can't just do zero legwork and just expect everyone to have read or watched the thing. You need to do a little bit of, you know, bringing people up to date. Like, you don't have to go hella in depth, but you gotta like give me like the bullet points. You know, like give me just a little bit. Put me in the scene. Like, what's it like for this character to experience these aliens for the first time? Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, way over explained, but like, that's gotta be a weird experience. And nobody even bats an eye in this book. It's like, oh, they're an aliens. Cool. I mean, we gotta fight them. I guess we're gonna shoot them. Like, that's what I'm trained for. I'm going to shoot these aliens.
Yeah, but he really does hand wave that away. Ugh. There's a bunch of chapters where, like, Master Chief is getting used to, being part of a team. Yeah. And then there's zero chapters dedicated to aliens. Huh.
Yeah, it seemed too much. That was my other thing is, like, I feel like, on the point of, like, it didn't need any John chapters, this book really didn't need to be an origin story for the Master Chief, and it was, because the title of the book is Fall of Reach, and what it really should have been doing was really nailing home, like, what Reach meant to, like, humanity, because I don't think it does even a good job of doing that.
No, it mentions a couple times that Reach is like a military base.
Yeah, it's like
a big one.
It's like their big super secret military base. They build a lot of ships there. They train a lot of people.
This book
should
have been way more about Reach.
Yeah. I kept waiting for it to happen where I'm like, oh, well, they're going to like introduce the thing in the title, right? And then they do it like a third of, like in the last third of the book. And I'm like, are they going to destroy it in this same book? I mean, it's called Fall of Reach, but like you haven't told me like anything about it, so I don't care about it. And that's the same way I feel like most of the Spartans. It's like a bunch of them just died, but like I don't, you named them, you sure,
you know,
did
what it,
you sure
it actually
name
is
them.
Pretty funny that you say that, because it's like, yeah, there are 75 or 60 Spartans, and then they all go to get the superpower serum. And oh, half of them are gone. It's like, cool, you didn't name half of the ones that lived yet anyway. So
yeah, there's like six named Spartans at that point. So I'm like, okay, one of them is a paraplegic now, or he has like what did he get? He got Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in a wheelchair. But all the other three named ones are fine. So
that's it.
and then one of them dies later. So.
The good series that I told you about actually deals a lot with that.
Good. That's how you should do that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's like, it's good ideas, like in theory. It's just like, if you're going to do that, you have to do the legwork to make that like impactful plot wise, you know?
I think all of the John chapters had all of the material that Bungie handed Derek Nyland, or like, hey, these are in our plot Bible. This is the backstory that we base this game around, so make sure that gets into the book so we can say it's canon. And so he's like, okay, and he crammed all that stuff in there. And I don't think that Captain Keyes was a named character in the first Halo book, but he was just the captain of the ship that John was on. Mm-hmm. And this book, I don't think that there was any backstory with him before Eric Nyland wrote it. And that's why I think there was backstory for John, and I think there was a little bit of backstory for Dr. Halsey, like, oh, yeah. Who's the doctor who made the Frankenstein Space Marines? And I don't think there was any backstory with Keyes. And he just like took that name because it was a proper noun from the first Halo book, and he's like, okay, you are one of my three main characters now.
Yeah.
And I think that's why those chapters feel the best, is because he didn't have to put any plot points in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't have to write towards any plot points. He just got to have chapters where he's like, I'm a sci-fi author, I'm gonna write some sci-fi shit.
Yeah, and all of those are actually, like, I mean, I said pretty good things about the Keys chapters, but like the Halsey chapters are pretty good too. Like, I was engaged. Like, they weren't like my favorite, because I mean, you could have done some more work to like really show her moral dilemma with what she's doing, because they kind of talk about it a couple times, but then it never really it's like a little subplot that doesn't really ever come to fruition in this book. I mean, maybe it does in later books, I don't know.
Oh yeah, like that good trilogy. Yeah. She's one of the characters, and it talks and everyone's just shitting on her constantly.
Yeah, I would be
for
too.
Being a monster, and she's just like, yeah, I deserve this.
Yeah, there's like just some weird stuff there, and then there's like a weird little comment about like the reason why Cortana is like low-key in love with Master Chief is because Halsey is.
Yeah.
And that's like weird. You're like his mom. You're like the closest thing he has to a mother figure.
It's
weird.
Not great.
And then he's also like an asexual robot, so like what do you even think you're gonna you're gonna do with that. I like that they did throw that line in at some point, that like the process of becoming a Spartan like turn them into like asexual, like,
yeah it's
automatons, like
the juice that they put inside you to give you the superpowers also causes a thing similar to chemical castration, where it's just like, I don't really care about fucking, I just care about fighting.
Yeah,
it's like, all right,
I just don't have hormones, basically.
Yeah, I don't have those hormones anymore. Those hormones have been rerouted to make my biceps fucking huge.
So like, like Halsey's chapters are pretty good. Key's chapters are pretty good. Honestly, like, you know, like if they had given like chapters from like Sergeant Mendez's perspective,
that would have been cooler.
That would have been cool. Like, you know, could have done some things. I think even Cortana, like the couple little good scenes trilogy, you get from her are good.
The good trilogy I was telling you about has perspective scenes from Sergeant Mendez. It's basically, you just keep describing like this good trilogy. I'm like, you should probably read that one if you want to like have a three like pithy sci-fi novels that you want to burn through in like in a month.
You know, I get three credits on my Audible right now, so I think maybe that'll be the thing I do next.
Pick up the first one and see if
sure, why not.
See if it like,
I did it for the 40K novels. I picked up the first, well, I don't think the first three, but they're the core trilogy for the 40K.
Oh yeah,
I forget what they're called. You know which ones I'm talking about.
Yeah. Like the Horus Heresy ones.
Yeah, the Horus Heresy, which are honestly not bad. They're pretty okay.
Yeah, I might give those a spin here in a bit.
It's super grimdark. Super grimdark.
Glass. It's Glasslands.
Glasslands.
Yeah, you should. Is the first of the. Of that good trilogy.
You should message me.
I've read
me
a
that
bunch
because yeah, I will. Forget.
I've read a bunch of other Halo novels. Well, I guess not a bunch, maybe a bunch. Some of them are fun. Mm-hmm. There's one called Contact Harvest, where it talks about humanity's actual first contact with aliens.
Oh, that sounds cool.
And it's from Sergeant Johnson's perspective. He's a character from the games.
Dope.
And he's basically Dutch from Predators.
Yeah.
And it's just him fighting aliens for the first time, and that's kind of fun, but again, yeah, is sort of a pithy sci-fi novel, like pulpy. And
there was kind of one chapter in this book that was kind of like that, where it was from the perspective of like a corporal and his private, and they're in a warthog, and the planet they're on is getting attacked by Covenant, and they're just like driving around like freaking out, like trying to figure out what the hell they're gonna do. One of their guys is like in a hole through him from a gunshot, and the other guy's like having super like PTSD shock, like can't do anything. And that was actually like a really good like ripping chapter. And
that's a really good, like, if you just break that out, it's a really good short story with like an actual an entire story arc.
It was
and,
super
like,
solid.
You get the climax where the guy who like got shot like stands up and shoots a rocket launcher, and like, yeah, there was a really good climax and denouement, and
yeah, that was definitely like one
this
of
book
the
is
highlights.
At its best. This book is at its best when it is as far away from the Master Chief as possible.
Yep, and then like the Master Chief, does he shows up at the end of that chapter, doesn't he? And like saves them basically. No, wait, no, he shows up later.
No, he shows up at the end of the. Other Spartans show up at the end of that chapter, where those guys are all standing around, like, they're catching their breath, they finally made it, and they see, like, a spaceship, a dropship coming down, like, oh, are we getting evacuated? And then a bunch of Spartans step out, and the guys are saying, hey, where's the backup? And the Spartans look around, and there's, like, five of them, and they say, we're the backup. We're here to fucking defeat the Covenant by ourselves.
And wreck this shit.
All the soldiers who got shot a bunch are just, like, okay,
cool, man, can we get out of here? this guy's dying. Yeah, no, so like I definitely think this novel is pretty much hamstrung by the fact that it's also trying to be a John origin novel. Like these should have been two separate novels. It should have been, yes, if you wanted to have a Master Chief origin story, do that. Maybe honestly don't make a full novel out of it, make like a novella, like at most, unless you really have some stuff you want to say about it.
Or just only ever have it happen in flashbacks.
Yeah, like a couple of flashbacks here or there would have been great. Like, honestly, if all of the John chapters had been sprinkled throughout the rest of this book instead of all in one big chunk at the beginning, I might have liked it a little better. Like, especially if you could tie them into the moment that's happening. like, and be like, oh, well, this is how the Master Chief learned. This is what he learned from this, like, trial as a kid.
Now he's dealing with the same thing. If you took, like, your idea of having, you never get inside Master Chief's head, so you just have, you just see him do some badass shit from another character's perspective, and then that chapter ends with that character going, holy shit, that shit was really badass, whoa, and the next chapter is a flashback to John being a kid and learning some shit that, like, would play into how he did that cool shit just before.
Exactly. Yeah, that would have been...
I think that would have been a good pace, and you could have... all those flashback chapters could have taken place on Reach like his whole childhood did, but that would have put, like, good, normal Reach when everyone is happy on there, like, throughout the whole book.
Yeah.
And so, right at the... Even up to right at the end, you could have had a flashback chapter where it was just a wholesome one where... John goes fishing on Reach.
Yeah, that's,
and then
that's
the very next line of the next chapter would have been, that creek exploded because of a bomb.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was the, that's the big thing, is that, like, I never really got, like, they definitely, like, I know factually they got trained on Reach. That was, like, the place that they trained and whatever.
Yeah.
I never really got a sense of it as a place, like...
It wasn't a home.
No.
It was just a... A noun for a location.
Yes, it was their weird torture training area. That's what it was.
Eric Nyland is not super great at the emotions side of the writing.
And I mean, he got there a couple of times, but not quite. Oh, and like so I did a little bit of, I tried to Google Captain Keyes because I was trying to figure out if he was a character I knew from any of the Halo games.
Oh, yeah, he is a bit character in the first Halo game.
Yeah.
Oh, and then his daughter is a main character for the
rest
next
of
several games.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I found out, because I searched his name. The first thing that came up was his daughter. And then through Googling, I found out that she's the daughter of him and Dr. Halsey.
Yes, it's never explicitly stated in the games, but... Oh, in that, again, that... good trilogy, it's explicitly stated.
That makes sense, because in this book it's not there at all. Like, there's like the first chapter from his perspective, he's like checking her out, like he's obviously like attracted to her, but then for the rest of the book they just kind of like nod at each other from across the room, and that's basically it.
Yeah,
they have
it.
Like a couple of scenes together, and no one says anything about anything, and it's like, if you guys had a kid together, I feel like it'd probably come up.
It would, and but not in this Eric Nyland book, because that's emotional stuff, and he doesn't have time for the emotional stuff. He has to tell you that the Master Chief is firing an MA5B rifle.
Yep.
He has to dedicate more words to that.
And he's running exactly 60 meters per second.
Okay, let's talk about the one really, really fucking badass, awesome chapter in this book.
Sure.
And you know exactly what it is, because it's the chapter I listened to just before we started recording this episode. And it's the Keyes chapter where he destroys all the Covenant ships.
Yep. And what, he's going against like four or five or something at once?
I just listened to it. He's going against two frigates, a destroyer, and a carrier.
Yep.
And he has just a destroyer, and the human spaceships are not as strong as the alien spaceships.
No.
So they only win when they outnumber them like 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just this really cool chapter with a lot of hard sci-fi technical details, where he does some cool spaceship battle maneuvers and destroys three of those ships all on his own.
Yeah, and you're always on edge, because you're never really sure if this character is going to live or not.
Yeah.
Like, I think I messaged you right after I listened to that one, because like up until that point I messaged you, I'm like, this is really dull, I don't know if I, this is hard to get through, like I'm trying, I really am, but it's going slow because it's just John chapter after John chapter after John chapter. And then I got to that chapter, I'm like, oh shit, that was really fucking cool, I liked that. That was good.
Yes, I knew exactly when you texted me that was a cool chapter. I'm like, oh, I know which one you just listened
to.
Yeah,
like he like uses a nuke or something to blow up all the ships. Or no, he gets them like crossfire at each other, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets them to crossfire one ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two ships, he has a nuke hidden, and he pops that nuke in order to take down their shields and then shoots them a bunch. Mm-hmm. And the whole time he's running his ship like in the red line, and he's doing like slingshot maneuvers, all that great, awesome.
Yeah, like sci-fi explosions are going off battle. In the background. Like I my head, I'm just like, I'm watching like one of the Star Trek J.J. Abrams movies.
There's also an intense emotional connection because one of his bridge crew is freaking out and thinks they're going to die and almost like commits mutiny. Mm-hmm. And so there's, it's not just, you know, man versus nature, which the Covenant basically take the place of nature in this scenario.
Yeah.
But it's also like man versus man. And like, and then from that character's perspective, it's man versus himself. Mm-hmm. And so, it's just, that is a very good chapter and is well written.
It's a very, very good chapter. There is a later
Eric
one.
Eric Nyland had just written an entire book that was that, it would be my favorite book.
No, that would have been just way better than this, for sure. Yeah. For sure. There's a later chapter where it's pretty similar to that, where it's another, like, naval battle. It's also really good. Mm-hmm. It's on Reach. Not as good as the first one, but still very good. Still very, very good.
The naval battles are my favorite sections of this book.
Yeah.
And they're the thing that make me want to write sci-fi, is I want to write more of that because I haven't found a sci-fi series that gives me more of that. So I'm like thinking, and, you know, it's one of my personal ambitions to become the author of a cheap paperback novel that gets sold at Targets.
Oh yeah, man.
And I would really love to just write a bunch about like space naval battles in three dimensions.
It sounds like that'd a great idea. You just pick out a couple characters. That's all you need. A couple characters, yeah. Do some naval battles. It'd be great. You don't have to get super ambitious with it. Just like get a core cast, do some naval battles. That's all you need. Really. Mm-hmm. Have a good enemy. Because I think that's I don't know. Like the Covenant are definitely imposing in this, but they are imposing because people keep telling you they are. Except for the one chapter where you watch the ground groups get like decimated.
Yeah, that was good for. Yeah. You gotta make. Yeah, it's like in wrestling, you gotta have your enemy come out. You have to have your heel come out and like have a couple squash matches against some jobbers in order to make them a plausible threat for the babyface who's got the strap.
Yeah.
And we don't ever get any chapters where the Covenant are just. We hear about it. We hear, oh man, they had a match last week where they really went to town on somebody, but we don't ever get to see them go to town on a motherfucker.
Yeah, so that would have been a cool thing.
Threat isn't very visceral for the reader.
Yeah, that would have been a cool thing to do, especially leading up to the final confrontation, to like really give a sense of like dread. There's one little bit where like the you get from a. This is like one of the only times it goes full omniscient. In the book, is it goes into a perspective of a probe ship that is following the ship that Keyes is on as he's going to Reach.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's coming from the planet, one of the planets that they, I think it's that first planet that he does the big cool fight on.
Yeah.
But they like sent a probe up and it like, it's like going from Keyes' perspective and it stops going from his perspective and it's like, little did they know, there is a stealth carrier ship clinging to the bottom of their battle cruiser or whatever. Like,
yeah, they have a Batman tracking device.
Yeah.
Stuck to the side of their ship.
But it's like a little aside, and that built a little bit of tension. And then I feel like it was definitely just like undercut by the fact that right after that, we just spent like another good chunk of the book with just more training montages with John trying to figure out. Like, using the armor and, like, getting Cortana and, you know, like, important stuff for, like, that character arc, but, like, really undercut, like, all of that.
Man, I think that, yeah, this first book was really hamstrung because he had to, like, all of John's chapters are centered around him getting additional superpowers because in the beginning he gets the superpower of teamwork.
Yeah.
And as then he gets the superpower of steroids.
Yeah.
And then they have to do a whole another section where he gets the superpower of power armor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to do one last chapter where he gets the superpower of having an AI in his brain. And it's like, man, how many more times are we going to like upgrade this dude and just have a whole chapter of him getting yet another superpower.
Yep.
And it's like an entire shonen series smushed into one novel in John's chapters, which is why I think it's very hamstrung. You don't get to have a lot of plot because he just has to go like, he has the fox, he has the Rasengan, he has the toad style, he has the fully controlled nine-tailed fox.
And now the planet's blown up. What planet? The planet. The planet.
Yeah, he's got the Kaioken. He's got Super Saiyan. He's got Super Saiyan 2. Oh, he's going SSJ SS. And, oh, Namek explodes. Wait, which planet was Namek? It doesn't matter. He's blue now.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry.
All of his friends are dead.
Yeah.
What friends? He had friends?
Yeah. He didn't have time to make friends. He just had to keep collecting superpowers like magic cards.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely, that's totally legitimate. It's just, yeah, that was, I think that's my biggest issue with it. Because, like, there's things in this book I liked, and all of them were, had nothing to do with the Master Chief.
No.
So, I mean, that's kind of, oh, there was one thing that did bug me. This might have been the thought I had earlier. In the beginning of the book, they just call him John a lot. And then at a certain point, they start calling him Master Chief and alternating that with John. But they never really explain that, I don't think. Unless I missed it. Is there a scene where they, like, give him the title of Master Chief?
I actually don't think there's a scene where they give him the title Master Chief.
Because
there's a scene where they give him the, hey, you're team captain.
Yeah, but they don't ever say it. They don't ever call him Master Chief. And I feel like that would have gone a long way because there's you end his like training montage where he's a kid and he gets superpowers and the armor and stuff, and then shortly after that, like, he's being called John all up until that, and then you get that one the one of the chapters where he's on the planet helping all the corporal and the other regular Marines who got their asses kicked earlier. And then from then on, they call him Master Chief almost exclusively that entire chapter. And in my head, I was going from the perspective of someone who didn't know anything about Halo. And in my head, I'm like, okay, I barely know that John is also the Master Chief. So if I was a completely never heard of Halo, picked this book up, started reading it, I'd be like, who the fuck's the Master Chief?
Yeah,
who's this guy? I don't know who.
It's almost
is
as
this
if
the
you're
is this the guy
a...
before? I don't. You didn't establish that book. Where? Do your work. Do your math. And then they like start alternating the names. And then if I continue to still not know, I'd be like, okay, so John's here, but who's this guy? Why aren't they talking? Why does it keep talking about them? What? What's happening?
Like, he also has the name of 117 that some characters call him that, or some characters call him John 117, or some people call him Master Chief. Or Spartan 117. It's like, it was clunky.
Yeah, you needed to like really define what all of his pronouns are at some point, and then make it a little better.
Okay, so overall, what is your overall impression of this book?
Final verdict: find a collection of all the good chapters out of this book. Read those. And if you're really, really just really horned up for like a Master Chief origin story, you can read all that stuff too. But like, you don't need it. And it does.
If you actually have a edit of this book where it just drops all the Master Chief chapters out, I bet it would actually be a pretty nice,
little
sci-fi
novella. I mean, it wouldn't have a plot, but well, actually, it kind of would because you took all the Keys chapters. It would actually almost work.
If you had a few more chapters with Keys,
you need like one or two more chapters with him and John together.
Yeah.
And then I think it would work. But no, mostly I think the biggest thing that makes it a bummer for me is that this is trying to be the Fall of Reach story. And there's a reason why they eventually made a game about the Fall of Reach called Reach.
That plot line in that game. Mm-hmm.
Fully
overwrites all the plot in this novel to where it does not connect. It uncannons a lot of shit in this novel.
That was right around when I stopped playing the Halo games. I stopped playing after Halo 3 ODST. And then I knew Reach came out. I was like, oh, that seems cool, but like, I don't really care that much. I don't care enough to go buy this next Halo game. But yeah, I knew vaguely what the story of that was about. And it didn't seem to...
I just realized the Fall of Reach video game uncanons all of the John chapters in this book, pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, well, not all of them, but all of the ones that take place when, like, all the characters end up back at Reach.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that it undoes. But it specifically does keep in that... like, most of the key stuff does happen. Oh, wait, no. They put him in a different place in the game. So, yeah. No, fuck it. They just go, you know what? We didn't think we were going to become a media giant. Let's go back to that origin story and just redo the whole thing to make it more interesting.
Yeah.
And they do a good job of that, I think, in that game.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's my biggest thing, is that it just doesn't do a good job in doing that. Oh, and I have one other thing. One other very small point. And this is actually... it made me think back to when I first read through Game of Thrones. Because there is the very first chapter in the very first Game of Thrones book is from the perspective of some random Night's Watch dudes.
Yeah.
And there is one scene right at the end where the lordling leader dude of the little Night Watch crew is getting ready to, like, run at the evil ice elves and, like, try to attack him, the walkers. And he screams for Robert. And when I read that for the first time, I laughed out loud, because up until that point, they hadn't established, like, base ass normal names. Like, in my head, I'm like, in fantasy novel name, like, land, you know, like, all the other characters had, like, pretty, like, fantasy names. And then he just, like, oh, the king's name's Robert. It's like his name's Bob. King, it is, yeah, King
it
Bob.
Is really, that was, it was really funny.
But so this book made me think about that, because all of the Spartans are just named like Kelly and John and like Daniel and
Linda.
Yeah, and Linda was.
They're all very, very normal names.
They're just, and like, I know that I get it. I get it if they're like they're like code names for these, like they're that and then a bunch of numbers, but when you just only call them that name, it just starts getting a little goofy for me, where it's like, here's these badass super soldiers and they're just named like my 60-year-old aunt.
Kurt.
Yeah. Kurt. Or yeah.
And you have other characters, your other perspective characters are like Halsey.
Yeah.
Keys.
They have
things you could trademark.
Definite like sci-fi names, or like even like Sergeant Mendez, like that's a solid, like, war fiction sergeant name. That's a good sergeant.
He sounds like he could be in either a World War II movie or in the next Aliens movie.
Yeah, whichever. But, like, every time they said one of the Spartans' names, I was just like, it just takes me out of it just a little bit. And, like, even when they have, like, really cool action scenes, and then they just start saying all their names rapid fire. Like, Linda and Kelly got to me a lot.
Linda, yeah.
Because, like, that just... I can't imagine someone in my head whose name is Linda.
Ashley went up and punched a grunt.
Hey, no, you leave Ashley alone. Because Ashley is the name of the main character from Evil Dead. And he's a badass.
But he's a guy named Ashley. That's a little... Oh,
makes it even cooler.
Yeah, yeah. Makes it even cooler.
Because guys were
named
Ashley.
It's like when a Russian sniper is named Sasha.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so my ending is, my like takeaway from this is, this is one of the most nostalgic books for me because, yeah, I read the shit out of this when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. This is probably the last time I'm going to read this book.
It's pretty fair.
As soon as I got done reading this, I did go and check out Glasslands again from the library and read like the first quarter, one third of that, because I wanted more of this universe, but written a little more
better. no offense to this author.
I think he
was being handicapped like this entire book.
Yeah, the chapters where he didn't have to write in all of the Hasbro toys that he had to sell are really good.
Yeah, would agree.
It's like 40K. The novels, you always know the novel that comes out right after they come out with a new model line is going to be shitty because they're mostly just writing that to sell Transformers.
Yeah.
But then the ones that you get to go away from there and just play around in this universe, those are going
to
be fun.
Yeah, the ones where you give the author a little bit of free rein to just do whatever, that's always going to be the better route in general.
Okay, so how are we going to make a drink out of this?
Good fucking question. So I feel like it needs to be like Reach themed and or Covenant themed.
Should we make it Reach themed, or should we theme it after the parts of the book that we thought were good because we want to make a good drink about it?
I'm actually into that idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Could we make a drink based only on the Keys Loop chapter?
Maybe. He's got a pipe. So maybe if you did something...
He does something... Yeah.
Like tobacco?
Tobacco, like a smoked cocktail.
Yeah, we have one of those at Fidel's. It's actually pretty good. The tobacco actually sticks to the glass really well, just because of the nature of tobacco.
Okay.
That's not a bad idea. I don't know what else to put in that drink, because I don't remember another time food was mentioned in this book. But not in like a Keys... I think they talk about scotch. Keys and one of the commanders have a little snifter of scotch at one point together.
We could, maybe if we don't want to tell people to like get their hands on like tobacco, like good, like, and not like you can't just like go get a cigarette and like break that
no.
up. No, you have to have like tobacco leaves, like dried tobacco leaves.
The way we do it at Fidel's, we literally have like house cigars that we'll just tear apart. And we'll use like the filler and tobacco from the cigar to light it. And that works pretty fucking well. And that'd be a pretty cheap way to do it. You just buy a fucking cigar and you can do the cigar of your choice, even. You know, you don't have to buy an expensive cigar and just buy like a all right cigar.
I do like having the actual smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if we're gonna do that, I would say we should use a non peated scotch. Monkey Shoulder.
Yeah, I would agree.
Monkey Shoulder is the cocktail scotch.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because anything else is going to be probably pretty aggressive. You can maybe do some like Lagavulin, but still.
If you were a space captain, what kind of drink would you like? If Keys had been, instead of holding a pipe, holding a cocktail in his hand, what sort of space captain drink should he be drinking?
That isn't just straight scotch?
That is not, it has to be a cocktail.
I'm going to say this, I'm a little biased because I just messed with it recently. Something with Earl Grey tea, because I'm thinking Star Trek with Picard, who loves fucking tea,
Earl Grey hot.
Yeah. So like, maybe like something like a, almost like a hot toddy, but you do scotch and tea.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
Would this be good? Literally a hot toddy. So
I'm wondering if the smoke like, nature of it's gonna come through though. That's my thing.
3/4 ounce lemon juice, 1/2 ounce simple, or maybe 3/4 simple. Mm-hmm. 2 ounces of monkey shoulder scotch. And smoke the glass with tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And then top that with 2 ounces of hot Earl Grey tea.
Yeah, doesn't sound bad. The only thing I will say about that is it will definitely come out lukewarm. For sure.
You gotta have, when you're doing a hot toddy style build, you have to like be... Yeah. You gotta juggle your temperatures really good. So you would have to... Whenever I made them at the bar, the best way I've found to make them is to take your mug... whatever, like Irish coffee glass mug or something, fill that with basically boiling water.
Yeah.
And set it on the side as you take your whiskey and your simple syrup and your lemon, and you get that all ready and together. And maybe, I don't know, I guess you wouldn't shake it, because that's not, you don't want it diluted, because the dilution is going to come
with the amount of tea that you add.
I would always let the glass sit for a while, because it would always come when I'm building a round, not a drink. So you fill that up first thing, and then you build your other cocktails, and then the last thing you do is pour your liquid into that hot glass and then top it with more hot liquid.
But you still have to smoke it. So you would need to heat it, then smoke it.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're going to need something like, you're going to need to heat the liquid, like the cocktail liquid, or you're going to need to have like some kind of hot element for your mug, like, I don't even know, like a heat lamp or something.
I didn't think about you having to smoke the glass so that you can't have the glass upside down catching smoke and also have it full of boiling water. Because when you turn a glass upside down and it has boiling water in it, I don't know if you know this, but the boiling water comes out.
It goes everywhere. Okay, so what you could do, have you seen those, they're like a full enclosure?
Yeah, that's actually what I had the last at Mutant.
I would say you do something like that. So that way you can fill your glass full of hot water and then put that on top, because it's still going to smoke the rest of the glass. Because really you just need the aromatics on it. It's not really going to interact with the actual like cocktail itself, even if it's inside the glass, I don't think.
Ooh, okay. So there was this really dope-ass bar I went to in Wellington when I was driving through there one time. And they took Nika from the Barrel bottles, those cool tiny square bottles.
Yeah.
And they would build their cocktails in that bottle and have a little funnel to get it in there. Mm. And then they had a smoke gun. And they would feed the tube into the bottle and then fill it up with smoke and then put that little cool metal cap on top and hand that and a cup, an empty cup to the guest and be like, cool, take this, pour a little bit out into your cup and then cap it again and let it keep sitting there with the smoke so that you're not drinking the whole thing at once and it's just sitting there with the smoke for a long time.
Interesting. That's a cool idea.
So if you had like a mason jar or a separate vessel to build the cocktail in and put smoke on top and keep that there and then have your own like glass, though.
And you're still going to issue with being hot. Yeah.
It's not going
to
be hot.
Yeah. I think the way you're going to need to do it is to smoke the whole, like get an enclosure like that, smoke the whole glass, or maybe you could, pump the smoke into the water. I don't know if that's gonna work though.
We would have to have a lot of specialized equipment for this one at this point.
For sure. I mean, I think you could get this done pretty easily at home without that much difficulty, I think. Because I mean, literally the way we smoke glasses at Fidel's is we just have a piece of wood and we light the tobacco and we put the glass on top of it. And
yeah, that's how like a lot of places smoke their glasses.
I mean,
glasses.
That's all you need to do. To get your glass to be hot, though, is the issue I'm coming up with. So, I mean, I think you could probably find a way to do it pretty easily, because you would just do that on a bigger scale. You would just need to smoke a lot of thing, put a big enclosure over your glass that's full of hot water, and then build the rest of your cocktail really quick. Let that sit for a minute, and then you can literally just pull it off, dump the water, put your cocktail in. Done.
Hmm.
Which doesn't seem bad.
Okay, hold on. Weird idea.
Sure.
Have like I just keep thinking of an Irish coffee like glass, like a glass mug, like an Irish coffee mug.
Yeah.
Take a bag of Earl Grey tea, like a single serving bag of Earl Grey tea you get from like Twinings or something.
Yeah.
Put that in the mug. Put your simple syrup, lemon, and scotch on top of it, and then fill with boiling water, like. Fresh off the like out of the whistling kettle boiling
and just
water.
Go straight for it and let it steep for a minute. Actually, that might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, and just have a cocktail with a steeping bag of Earl Grey tea inside.
Yeah, and like smoke it beforehand on that.
I guess smoke it beforehand. I think
that should still work fine.
Yeah, honestly. I would almost think that maybe we should. I do really like the idea of having the tobacco smoke.
Yeah, because that was like one of the big points they made about Keys is that he's got the pipe on him, even though he should not have a fucking pipe.
But we could accomplish that by using an ounce and a half of Monkey Shoulder and a half ounce of peated scotch.
That's
like
true.
Bag 10.
Yeah, that might be the better way to do it, honestly.
Yeah.
I wonder if you
Just don't use Lafroy.
Yeah, don't use Lafroy.
you can use Kilhoman, Ardbeg 10. Lagavulin, anything else.
What about a tobacco-infused liqueur? Or a tobacco-infused liquor? I wonder how that would be. I haven't had anything like that before.
I've never attempted that. I think that tobacco as like a... I've, I think I've tried a tobacco tincture, but I don't think I didn't like it, because tobacco doesn't actually have a lot of good flavor. It's just very like bitter and acrid.
Yeah, it's very pungent in general.
Yeah, and it's not great in any other form other than smoke. You could argue that's not great in smoke form either. Nope. But
a lot of people like it though.
A lot of people do like it. I think if we're going for both hot and like tea, though, I think having it also be smoked is just a hat on a hat.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think we would have to get rid of one of those
two. I think you're probably right. The better solution is to just to go with the tea and to do like a half ounce of a peated, because then you're going to get like a smoky flavor, which is the smoke, basically, of the idea of it. I'm pretty okay with that.
But it's already in the liquid.
And I think, you know what we did, Adam? We made a very fall drink.
We did. We made a toddy.
We made a toddy, which is relevant because it's the fall of Reach.
It is the fall of
God. They never said what month it was. They never said what month it was. Maybe Reach is fine. It was just, you know, that one really bad fall that happened at Reach.
All right, the fall of okay. So, what would we name this drink? Because we're really basing this off of just keys, and because it's the parts that we really like.
How about like I don't know, like keys something.
The thing that they pointed out in the book is after he did that cool maneuver where he destroyed all those Covenant ships, and everyone was like, oh, holy shit. People started calling it the Keys Loop.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I kind of like that.
So we could call
the Keys Loop. Yeah, do that. Yeah.
The Keys Loop.
Make sure you spell keys right. It's got two E's.
Oh, it does? Where?
It's K-E-Y-E-S. Keys.
K-E-Y-E. Oh, yeah. Two. I thought you meant like K-E-Y-E-E-S. No. I'm like, wait, what? No.
Well, it's not like keys like on a ring. It's like keys like a, you know, like a name.
Yeah. Okay, so to make the keys loop, you take a Irish coffee mug. You add in 3/4 an ounce of simple syrup, 3/4 an ounce. Ooh, or actually, no, honey syrup.
Yeah, you should do honey syrup for sure.
3/4 an ounce of honey syrup, 3/4 an ounce of lemon juice, 1.5 ounces of monkey shoulder scotch, 1/2 ounce of peated scotch, just not Lagavulin.
Mm-hmm. Not Lagavulin.
Or just not, just not Lafroig.
Lafroig, yes. The other L one, not that one.
Yeah.
Don't do that. You can have some of that on the side if you want.
You could do Lachig, you could do Lagavulin. Like
literally any other peated scotch.
Any of the other L's, but any like other. Lafroig is, it doesn't cocktail well.
Nope.
Okay, so... And then you add 1/2 ounce of peated scotch and top with boiling water after having put a pack of Earl Grey tea. And the garnish is the bag of Earl Grey tea coming off, like hanging out with a little like string and little paper towel.
Yeah, I do kind of like that, because that lets the person drinking can decide how long they want it to steep for. Because me personally, I do heavily steep my tea, like all the time.
I heavily steep my tea. When I make tea, I let it sit for 3 to 5 minutes steeping, and then I just leave the bag in there the entire time I'm drinking the tea.
I actually don't really like Earl Grey by its like as a tea, because like when I drink tea, I don't add in sugar or citrus or anything. I just do.
I just bought Earl Grey tea today because it's my favorite tea.
I just don't. It's never really done much for me. I don't know what the flavor. Like I made an Earl Grey cordial here recently. We've been talking about it, and I really like that, and it worked really well in that cocktail, but having that heavy citrus really helped it, I think, because I did like a lime cordial. But like I've never been a big fan. I've always been a bigger fan of like oolong or like Darjeeling.
Yeah,
like way better.
I don't think I've actually ever had Darjeeling.
I would recommend it. Has a lot of caffeine, so is Earl Grey though.
Well, I always get decaf Earl Grey.
So. You might be able to find decaf Darjeeling. I don't know. I've seen decaf Earl Grey. I haven't seen decaf Darjeeling before. So
decaf Earl Grey is pretty easy to find, at least in the States. Yeah. It's not easy to find anywhere else.
Weird.
Okay, so that was the Keys Loop. That was Fall of Reach. Mm-hmm. And so please join us next time when Logan's turn is next. And
sure is.
the topic that he chose for next time is International Day of Mathematicians, which is the 14th of March, which I think is pretty fucking like on the nose because it's Pi Day and everyone knows that as Pi Day, but it's also International Day of Mathematicians. So I'm really excited to talk about mathematicians and Pi Day because my partner is a mathematician.
I picked that with her in mind. I don't know if you knew that. Because I wanted to bring on as a guest.
Oh yeah, yeah, she would be great. And the last Pi Day, we actually threw a party where we made I don't know if we put the drink on here yet, but it's pumpkin 0.14159. Because it's a pumpkin pie drink.
Yeah, it's pumpkin pie. It's really nerdy. I like it. That's good.
So please join us next time as we talk about pie.
Pie.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode. I had a lot of fun. Logan, did you have a lot of fun, Logan?
I had a really good time.
Yeah, it was a really good time. We got drunk. We talked about a thing. We made a cocktail.
That sure was a thing.
If you want to hear more about the cocktails that we're making, follow us on Instagram at Cocktail Conceit. We post more than just the cocktails on the show. We post cocktails that we're working on in our outside life. And if you want to ask us about media or cocktails or anything in between, contact us by emailing overlyhornybostonbusdriver@gmail.com. Logan, how do you spell that?
I'm not spelling that, Adam, but it is overlyhornybostonbusdriver@gmail.com. Pretty easy to figure out. And if you'd like to further support us, you can join us on Patreon, where you'll get access to exclusive content and cocktails made by yours truly. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Oh, hey, there's Toby.
It's Toby. There he is. He's got a spot. What do you know?